And welcome to WGN Nightside. I'm Elton Jim Toronto. Be with you till 1 a.m. on this new kinda show. That's right after the Patty Vasquez with Andrea Darla show and right before Nick DiGilio. Just kind of sandwiched in for a couple of hours, but hey, any time on the radio is a good time on the radio, and so I'm glad to be hosting the nighttime. It reminds me, if anybody out there remembers on WGN television back in the late 70s and early 80s, WGN television was actually very ahead of its time. They had a show called Nightbeat that was a newscast at around midnight, and it was hosted by Marty McNeely, who was one of the anchors. And I just always remember because, you got to remember, in the late 70s, I know people of a younger age can't understand that there was not a time when there was all access to anything you wanted any time. Believe it or not, folks, TV stations used to shut off. They would actually shut off at a certain point.
We now conclude our broadcast day.
Exactly.
Followed by the playing of the national anthem.
Exactly. They play the national anthem, and then they would have this test pattern, a lot of times with an Indian on it for some reason, or I should say a Native American.
And there'd be that 1 kilohertz tone.
Yeah, just buzzing for the rest of the night. And that there was, in fact, if you ever see the original pilot for Happy Days, which was actually on Love American Style. That's where that show got started. There is a scene where Mr. C and Richie are standing as the TV station goes off the air. They are standing with their hands on their heart while the national anthem plays on the television.
And usually for a lot of, even through the 70s.
Yes.
TV stations were signing off at 2 a.m. and they'd sign back on at 6 a.m.
And that's my point. And so they had, so WGN was actually kind of a trendsetter in that they had this midnight newscast with Marty McNeely called Nightbeat. And I'll never forget as a little kid watching it because I always had weird insomnia even as a little kid. And so I would watch this. And they were keeping up to date because, you know, a lot of times, as David knows, a lot of news happens between 10 a.m. and 5 a.m. It seemed like the world shut down for those hours. Nothing really would happen unless the newspaper came out the next day. But as we know, news happens 24 hours a day. And so WGN had this Nightbeat newscast with Marty McNeely, and he used Dave Brubeck's Take Five, the classic jazz song, as the theme, because it was kind of late night and jazz. And at that time, midnight was late. I mean, in today's world, midnight, people are starting to just get dressed to go out. But at that time, midnight was actually late. And so Marty would come on, but they would have these pictures of the streets deserted with street lights, and they would have Take Five playing. So I thought for my, at least hopefully, the first of many hostings of the Nightside, that I would use a little jazzy opening. So this is, of course, David Donald Fagen of Steely Dan from his Nightfly album and New Frontier. So, hey, it's Elton Jim with you on WGN Nightside. The Nightside is the right side here at WGN. I'm working tonight with producer Tom Hush, and he's been all over the place. He was just on Patty's show. He'll be chiming in every so often. He's producing. There's a Tom Hush producing the show. Tonight, producing the show. So Tom will be in and out. As I said to Patty, in a little while we will talk to my godson Patrick on the Millennial Meter. And Tom, a lot of times, who's also a millennial. How old are you, Tom?
I'm going to be 25.
Oh, my goodness. You're even more millennial than Patrick.
I know.
Wow.
I know.
So a lot of times they gang up on me to tell me how much I am not trending. Oh. And so I will throw things at them to see. And over the past couple of years, when I've done my, I use Patrick, as I say, my millennial meter. That's what I call the segment. My millennial meter, because I need, you know, as I get older here, I'm feeling a bit, not a lot, but a bit, you know, am I losing my edge? Am I still cool? So I use Patrick as my millennial meter to find out if I'm still cool and if I'm still making the scene. I think by the fact I'm saying making the scene, it proves that I am no longer cool. But I will ask him about things. And what we'll talk about today is Patrick and I went on a vinyl hunt about two weeks ago. Of course, he being a millennial, he's into vinyl. Of course, me being I'm sort of in the middle. I was born in 1964, which puts me officially as a baby boomer, but makes no sense because the baby boomers were born in 1945 after the war. I have really nothing in common with somebody who's 75. But to make it nice and neat, they use 64 as I think 65 is a cutoff. So I'm somewhere in the middle between a Gen Xer and a baby boomer. I'm somewhere in the middle. But, of course, I was raised on vinyl, as well as cassettes and even 8-tracks, and even reel-to-reels, if you remember those. So now I find it interesting that the millennials are into vinyl, even though they grew up with CDs. We grew up with vinyl and got rid of vinyl in favor of CDs. So we went on a little vinyl hunt because he needed to create a vinyl collection. Because I went to his house and I saw a couple of albums that I said, well, that won't do. You need a better collection. So we went on a vinyl hunt. I'll also talk about an interesting thing in the news. They apparently, for all the big jobs everybody has now with tech firms and everybody's got stock options and these big salaries, especially in the tech world for millennials, it seems that millennials are the worst tippers out of all the age groups. So I'm going to ask Patrick how much he's throwing down for his favorite barista. And later on in the show, we have Mick Kaler, who is a frequent guest, and I do a segment called the Pop Culture Club. So we'll talk about, as I said, not only the Roseanne dust-up, and now the new show that will be without Roseanne called The Conners, but I really want to address this thing that happened a few weeks ago at the Tony Awards. Did you see the Tony Awards? I mean, I'm a huge fan of Robert De Niro, and we'll get into this later, but I really was disappointed in what he did. Politics aside, you can love Trump, you can hate Trump. I don't care about that. What really made me mad was that Robert De Niro upstaged Bruce Springsteen. That was the problem. And we'll talk about that in the Pop Culture Club segment. Anything else you want to talk about, too? Hey, it's the night side. It's the right side. It's Elton Jim until 1 a.m. Phone number is 312-981-7200. That's also the number for the text. So if you want to text in, certainly do that. I will be reading those throughout the show.
I got one for you.
What's that, David?
Did you see the story about the housing prices in California?
I was just in California.
In San Francisco specifically,
yeah,
the Bay Area.
Yeah, what are they like? It's like, what, $2 or $3 million for what?
Let's just say that housing prices are so high, the median price is so high now in San Francisco Bay Area,
yeah,
that a family making $117,000 a year,
right,
is now considered by the federal government, because of the cost of housing, to be low income.
Yeah. Oh, and that's been going on for a good, I mean, now it's getting to the point of ridiculousness, but I remember...
Within the city of San Francisco itself, median price is over $1 million.
Definitely.
For the whole Bay Area, it's like $950,000, $960,000.
Many people who have, and San Francisco's it's one of my favorite cities. I've gone there quite a bit. People that have moved from other areas to San Francisco, they wind up having to either sell most of their furniture or put it in storage because whatever they can afford is not even half of what they used to have in another city just because of those prices that you're talking about. I'm really not surprised by that. The house, I mean, it's a beautiful. You got to love the weather. You got to love the city, the food. There's a lot to offer there, but come on, $1 million. You should not, the average price to live in a city should not be $1 million. I don't care where it is, but that's an interest. I'm not surprised because that's been going on in the Silicon Valley area for many, many years. But anyway, Elton Jim with you here at WGN Nightside till 1 a.m. Once again, phone number 312-981-7200. We'll take a quick break and we'll be back after this. No switching. Jim Toronto back with you here at WGN Nightside at WGN 720 a.m. I'm sure you've heard enough, if you're a regular WGN listener, about the new studios. They are certainly, this is my first time here today, just walking around. Definitely impressive, definitely cool, definitely high tech, definitely very sleek and modern, very cool, and that's all I'll say. But I have to also mention, because I'm sure you're tired of hearing about that, so I'm going to move on, but I do have to mention one thing that I am concerned about. When I was working here on a regular basis, in the Showcase studio, there was a Elton Jim vocal setting for my voice. And so I'm hoping that I'm sounding the same. I'm hoping that the engineers brought that vocal setting on the board, that transmits, because I definitely want to sound.
If it's what I think it is,
uh-huh.
It's still there.
Okay, very good. Because I'm just a little worried. I want to make sure the Elton Jim setting.
Someone found it Saturday night and was a little freaked by it. Okay, so they're like, "What's that echo coming from?"
Right.
They were not familiar with the era from whence that comes.
Sadly or unbelievably, I was just looking at my calendar. It was 2009 when I first came here with Gary Myers. So it's almost 10 years ago that we started here. I can't believe that. So I was hoping that the Elton Jim vocal setting. I recently did a play here locally in Chicago, and I was very flattered, but I was kind of baffled at the same time. Some woman said, "Oh, you've got such a great voice. I could just listen to you read the phone book."
And now I was like, "Know how I feel."
Oh yeah, you've got to get. I mean, you've got the pipes. I don't feel that my voice. You've got the Dave Jennings pipe. I mean, those are the pipes that we all would hope for. I was surprised to hear that. I was certainly flattered. I don't really believe it, but if you really heard me without the Elton Jim setting, it's almost like Bette Midler. So this is why I'm very happy.
It's a little different. You're trying to tell us, is that what this is about?
It's very New York, and it's very high pitched. So thankfully, as long as you're telling me that, the Elton Jim setting is there. So I'm glad that at least I sound a little like I used to. Now the other thing,
it's not on though.
Oh dear,
you have to find it.
Oh dear, that's not. I have to go over here. Where the heck is it then? I've got to find it. Where the hell is it?
I don't know, but good luck.
Oh, here it is. There it is. I found it. The Elton Jim setting. So now, I also have to christen. I know that Steve and Johnny have hosted the Nightside show before a few times, and they were the inaugural show, which is great. They're legends here. Walk of Fame. I have no problems with that. But I still don't think that they officially christened this show. And I don't think, even though the station has now been broadcasting from this facility and from this studio for at least a good week and a half, almost 2 weeks, I still don't think it's officially christened yet until, and if you listen to me on any kind of regular basis, you'll know that one of my favorite, I always believe in a room needs a good aroma as well as a good energy. Everybody's feng shui.
Oh, no.
But I'm really into aromas, and so if you listen to me with any kind of regularity, you know that one of my favorite scents is Glade's Cashmere Woods.
Uh-oh.
And so I really don't think until tonight the studio has been officially christened until not a champagne bottle busted against the window or against the counter here, but no, I just think a nice little spritz of a little Cashmere Woods, which is a little citrus. What do we have here? What does it say? I don't even know. I can't remember what my... It's definitely a citrus and vanilla. It's definitely... And amber, that's it. Amber, citrus, and vanilla. And so let me officially christen the WGN studios here at 303 Wacker. And let me officially christen the WGN Nightside show with a little spritz of Cashmere Woods.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Now it's home.
I tried something like that once a very long time ago in another place at Staten Lake.
Uh-huh.
And I decided I was going to burn some incense while I was on a Saturday night, mind you.
Cool, man.
Okay? And I thought, it was okay. The lights were dimmable. So, it was a nice mellow.
Oh, my goodness.
I heard about it from the then morning show host who were wondering what was that aroma
studio? Well, you sound like you were Venus Flytrap somewhere from WKRP.
No, it was talk. It was right here. It's right here. It wasn't all that long ago, but it was like I had the idea one night, light a stick of incense.
We'll see how Nick DiGilio likes it, but for right now.
Oh, man.
The studio is christened officially. We'll be back after this. No switching.
former RNC chairman Michael.
And it is Jim Tirano here at WGN Nightside. Be with you till 1 a.m. And right now we go to our phones for our very popular Millennium Meter segment with my 32-year-old godson, Patrick Minogue. Hey, Patrick, how you doing? Is he on? Do I have to hit the button or do you? I'm new to this board. Why
He's
is
on.
I hit phone? Are you there, Patrick?
Hear me, Patrick.
Do I have to hit my? Do I have to hit the button or is he on? Yeah, it says phone. It's up. I don't know. It says phone. You want to come in here? Isn't that the one that says P-H-O-N-E? Right? Okay. Folks, it's not me. I saw the one that says phone, P-H-O-N-E, and I had that button hit. Not my phone. Do we know what's going on, though? Well, we've got a little Donald Fagel music for you. Have a little more Cashmere Woods. No. Yeah, I tell you, I just came back from the coast, in fact. I was in Los Angeles for 2 or 3 days. Saw the Cubs play the Dodgers. And also went to the Hollywood Bowl, which is very cool. And boy, I tell you, talk about the hot weather here. It was so gorgeous there. 74 during the day and 60s in the evening. And we came home here. And as soon as we landed, I was sweating. As soon as we landed. Oh. But it's going to be even worse this weekend. But hey, you know, I guess we just have to take the good with the bad. At this point, what are you going to do? It is what it is. So, how about now there, Husher? Yes, no, maybe so. We got problems here with the phone. No, there, I hear him now. Are you there, Patrick?
I'm here, Jim. There he hey, is. How are you?
Hey, there's my millennial meter.
What's going on? How
Not
you?
Much. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Yes, well, I need to have, once again, I always have to have a check-in with you every so often to find out if I am still cool. If I am still making the scene, if I am still trending with the hipsters, and you are right in that sweet spot, 32 years. You're actually going to be 33. How scary is that?
I know. I feel like I'm aging myself out of this.
I know. You're not going to be my meter in a couple more years. Although
right.
In a couple more years, I won't know the difference. I'll be jabbering and not knowing what I'm talking about, so it doesn't really matter anyway. But so a couple of weeks ago, we had a talk about an interesting symmetry or a circle of life happen. So I went to Patrick's apartment about a few weeks ago. Actually, it was around Easter time, so it was that, well, more than that.
Yeah.
And I walk in, and he's on his windowsill, strategically placed. He's got two albums sitting there that definitely you are supposed to see when you walk in. I mean, you are supposed to realize that now you are in the home of a hipster and that there's some vinyl here. Because
it's in the eye line.
You
know, sure.
It's more than in the eye line. And so it was, and I was, much to my surprise, you know, it wasn't, you know, some hip-hop album, or it wasn't even one of your favorites. I know for many years you were a big Dave Matthews fan. But it was Bob Seger's Stranger in Town and Fleetwood Mac's Rumors. And I'm like, yep. Well, okay, why do you have those two? And don't get me wrong, I have those two albums. Rumors, one of the biggest selling albums of all time, and always loved Bob Seger. In fact, on Stranger in Town, one of my favorite songs is a song called Famous Final Scene from that. It's an album track, but one of my favorites. But anyway, but I said, you know, I think, Patrick, we need to upgrade your vinyl collection. I saw that you bought a turntable, or as your brother-in-law called it, a vinyl player.
Right, Jay.
I mean, I fell on the floor. He goes, is that one of those vinyl players? And I said, no, you mean a turntable? But I guess, you know, it was called a CD player before, right? So why not a vinyl player? I understand, Sam, where you're coming from, but wow. I almost fell off the table when he called it a vinyl player.
A vinyl player,
which I actually I like to use that now. It's actually pretty funny. But so a couple weeks later, I took Patrick to one of my favorite record stores, Valhalla in Oak Park, which is a
Valhalla,
a landmark place. And I had some credit there because I traded in several of my CDs. I had a collection of over 3,000 CDs, and so I traded in about, you know, I can't remember many. So I had some credit there. They gave me some store credit. So being the good godfather that I am, I said, Patrick, I'm going to splurge you, and you can go and just go shopping and buy whatever you want on vinyl and boost that collection. And so tell the folks what you wound up picking out.
Yes, yeah, so I'm looking at them right now. So I walked away with a pretty good haul, a good range, too. I think you had a good laugh. But I went from, okay, so I went Neil Young, Decade.
Which is like a greatest hits album. Three album
set. Yeah, three LP set. Yep. And then I got, so that's one. I did Al Green's Greatest Hits.
Nice.
Yep, big fan. Then I went to, I switched up a bit. I did Chopin, The Nocturne.
Yeah, that one shocked me. You went for for a classical album. I'm like, Chopin? When did you ever learn about that?
Well, I was talking, that's like my, I think I, just like, you know, looking for like playlists at work, I just kind of stumbled upon, you know, I did take a couple music theory classes in college, and I took some classical music classes, and then, you know, I kind of fell in love with
Chopin. So are the millennials into classical music, or is that just something, like, do you sit around with your friends and... And play Vivaldi or what? And Mozart? I mean, what?
Baroque. Yeah. I think I'm definitely on the fringe on that.
Yeah, I was very shocked by that one. But shocked but impressed. I mean, believe me, I love classical music. I have a huge, as I said, my record collection goes from the Sex Pistols to Pavarotti. So I was very impressed. Right. Yeah, so what else did you get?
Good. So then I went the Beach Boys' Pet Sounds.
Pet Sounds, classic. That's one of the greatest all-time albums of all time.
Yep. And then I did Miles Davis, Kind of Blue.
Gotta love it. That's the quintessential. Yeah. Now, that is also the quintessential hipster millennial album. I was just saying to him when he bought that, I said,
I'd agree.
So in your cool little pad there, I could just imagine you cranking your jazz Miles Davis Kind of Blue album and maybe keeping your door open just a crack so people in the building can hear how cool you are. Oh, wow, he's playing Miles, man. Awesome.
Yeah. Exactly. Some candlelight inside.
Yeah,
you know,
No, that one, yeah.
Bed, you, Bath & Beyond, but that's okay.
It's a great, I love that album. It's a great album. It's one of my favorites. Yeah. I own it. I have several different incarnations, but that was really a cliched pick, even though it was a good pick.
I agree.
Yeah, I agree.
But I feel like, you know, again, like
you try out
if I'm making a collection, I have to go with the classics as well. Right.
Try out Bitches Brew. That's another good one by Miles. But go on.
Okay. That'll be my next. And then I think maybe, I don't want to say like cliched, but I feel like I needed a Beatles album. So, you know, you and I were talking about, do we do the greatest hits? Do we do the one, right, with all the number ones? But I went with Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
Now, once again, a very good choice. I mean, a good foundational thing. I also should mention, when Patrick turned 16 and CDs were still the rage, almost 20 years ago, for your 16th birthday, I bought you about 20 or so CDs that I said were a good foundation for any musical, collection to start from.
Yeah.
You, of course, have lost those.
Lost in translation.
I'm like, I said, well, Patrick, you'll bring all those CDs that I bought you so you'll know what you could pick. Oh, I can't find it. Oh, very nice. So money well spent. Very nice.
Right. Well, I will say this, Jim. That inspired me to, become like you asked me, I'm interested, why aren't you getting, the Dave Matthews or some of the more modern music? But I think, you buy me those classic albums from a young age, kind of like me kind of getting introduced to music in general, kind of put me on that path of really appreciating music from kind of a time.
Well, if that happened, then I'm happy it happened because that was the goal. Now, the interesting part of this is this really came in full circle because the irony of our whole situation, I took Patrick to a vinyl store to buy him some vinyl so he could now give me a cool hipster, and he has his vinyl player, and he can have some vinyl to play on his vinyl player. But what's so ironic about this, that we really came full circle because about, 7 or 8 years ago, it was Patrick who nudged me into the new century because I did not have an iPod. And he was like, how could you not have an iPod? And I had, like I said, I had 3,000 CDs that I really almost, all of them by hand downloaded into that iPod. I have over 23,000 songs on my iPod Classic. And I almost, I had them all stacked around the house. I just was kept doing. I was falling asleep with my finger on the down on the download button sometimes. So what was so funny was that you brought me into the future in terms of the iPod, and now I have brought you into the past with vinyl. But here's my biggest. Here's the biggest. Oh my gosh! Moment. So once again, very impressed with your selections. Mm-hmm. We had a good time. We had a little lunch, and we went. It was a nice day. It was really fun.
Yeah.
But here's folks. This is the millennial for you, and that's why I've said many times on this segment, Patrick. I love you to death, but I hate everything you stand for. As a millennial, and here's why. Why. You know that I am a huge Elton John fan and a huge Bruce Springsteen fan, right?
Yes,
I take you to a record store to pick any album that you can. I don't care if it's a triple album, which you went and bought three albums of Neil Young. Not one album of Neil Young. Not two albums. A triple set. Triple set. He bought, what, seven or eight albums total. I approve wholeheartedly with all your choices. But I have to say, I was a little disappointed that of all the albums in that store that you could have picked, and I've taken you to see Elton, I've taken you to see Bruce.
Multiple times.
How many Bruce Springsteen and or Elton John albums did you buy when we went out vinyl hunting?
That'd be a total of zero.
Zero would be the total of an amount. So I have to say, as much as I enjoyed the day, it wasn't as enjoyable as it could have been.
Right. But, as I'm checking out, you're like, oh, interesting choices here. I see something missing. I see two.
And he's like, and Patrick's walking through there, and he's going, well, this is pretty good. I mean, I was thinking about this one. And then he pulls out this Chopin one, and I'm like, so let's see. You don't get Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, or you don't get Captain Fantastic, but you get Chopin. Once again, I think it's a great choice. I just think, you know, you could have thrown one for the old man.
Well, you know what? You know what? I think that's fair. Fair. In my defense, I will, of course, have a rebuttal as a millennial.
Okay. Hold that rebuttal till after the break, because I can't wait to hear it myself. I'm Elton Jim Toronto on WGN Nightside here. We're with you until 1 o'clock. We'll be back right after this to hear what Patrick's rebuttal is as to why he did not buy either an Elton John or a Bruce Springsteen album when I treated him to buy whatever album he could. We'll be back after this. No switching. Jim Toronto back with you here at WGN Nightside. WGN 720 AM. We continue my millennial meter segment with my godson Patrick, who is a millennial, 32 years old, born in 1985. And so we were talking about Patrick and when I went did something very millennial with a couple of weeks ago. Not only did we go out and be foodies and had lunch, but then we went vinyl hunting so he could build up his vinyl collection. And what I was complaining about is I totally said go to the store. I had some credit at a vinyl at Val's Halla in Oak Park. I said, go on, just go shopping, have fun. He bought several great albums. I had no problems with that, except of all his choices, he did not buy one Elton John or one Bruce Springsteen album, and I would love to know why. So, Patrick, go on.
Okay, so here we go. So, okay, two things. One,
You have two reasons?
I have two reasons.
Wow, I don't know. I thought
this out.
I'm not even going to believe one of them, but wow, two. Okay, go ahead.
All right, so one being... We did discuss you mentioning, you just kind of ran out of time because I had an event to go to, but that, you know, you were going to go through your collection and see if there'd be any that you'd be willing to part with. So that being said,
I'm going to give you one of my Elton John and Bruce Springsteen albums? I mean, I love you.
I assumed, and we know what happens when you assume, but I thought that, you know, maybe there's a couple, two, three copies of Yellow Brick Road that maybe you'd be able to part way with.
You know, that's one. Here's the thing. I've got Good Brick Road on yellow vinyl. I've got it on 180 gram vinyl. I've got the, I mean, right. Okay, but I'm not giving you any of them. Go on, next one.
Not giving them. Okay, so good enough. And then also, on the Bruce front, I do, a friend got me Bruce Springsteen's Brilliant Disguise.
Okay, but that's a single. So, that's a song.
Well, it's got Brilliant Disguise and Lucky Man on it.
Oh, so yeah, it's a 45 though. That's not an album, you know that, right? Or was it an album that was like it was a 45?
No, it's a 45. Yeah,
it's
right.
A 45. It's not an album. It's two songs. Those songs came from an album called Tunnel of Love, which would have been a nice choice.
Right.
It's one of my favorite, but of course, you didn't pick a Bruce Springsteen album. In fact, I took him to see Bruce Springsteen in 2 years ago perform the entire double album of The River live, and you didn't buy it. You didn't buy it. Thank you very much.
Well, and then also, I'm just going to throw, like, this is where I just make all the excuses.
Yeah.
So So 2B. I wasn't sure how, you know, after I kind of got a little crazy in there, you know, like I pull up the Neil Young, it's $40. What's happening? How much money do we have here? Oh wait, I'm spending Jim's credit. You know, it got a little out of hand.
You know what? I got news for you, Patrick. If you would have said, you know what, I'd really love to get this one, I would have bought it for you. You see, you could have got an extra album, but okay,
right.
Okay, well, anyway, so, Patrick, you live with that. You think about that, and the next time we go out, we'll see what you pick.
Okay, that sounds good. I guarantee it's going to be chock full of Bruce and Elton.
Well, very good. I'm glad you're well on your way to having a good vinyl collection to use with your vinyl player. So that ends another scintillating segment of the Millennial Meter here at WGN. Thank you, Patrick. We'll talk to you later, man.
All right, thanks, Jim. Thank you.
Okay. Jim Tirano with you here at WGN. The Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet weekday mornings at 720 WGN, 720, at 720, on 720 WGN Chicago. The smart speaker users just say, play WGN Radio on TuneIn. What I like about hosting the WGN Nightside Show, which goes from 11 o'clock p.m. till 1 a.m., is that it's a little bit of this and a little bit of that. It's a little bit of Thursday. It's a little bit of Friday. It's right in that little sweet spot, right in the middle. Jim Tirano with you here at WGN. Be here for another 50 minutes or so, and then setting the table for Nick DiGilio. So we have got you covered here until the morning hours, and Steve Cochran starts at 6 o'clock, so just keep it tuned right here, WGN, 720 a.m. in the city of Chicago. Yeah, this is the night side. It's the right side. I got a quick question for my producer here, Tom Hush, who is also a millennial. I was talking to my godson Patrick about some millennial kind of things. Do you have a vinyl collection?
Oh, yeah, of course, of course.
Of course. Of course. I mean, my goodness. Do you have a vinyl player?
I do. I have a pretty nice turntable. I got a...
Oh, you call it a turntable?
Yes, I do.
I call it a vinyl player.
Ah, potato, potato.
So, do you have a diverse collection?
Yeah, a lot of bands that I currently listen to, they put out all their new records on vinyl.
Right.
So,
yeah.
I always, if there's an album that I really like, I mean, I've got my Apple Music subscription, so I can listen to whatever I want.
Certainly.
But if there's someone that I really enjoy or something that I listen to a lot, want to sit down and listen to it, enjoy it, I'll go out and buy, I'll go over to Reckless Records over in Lakeview, pick it up and take it home and just get back.
Do you think that the vinyl explode? I mean, I don't know how much of an explosion is. I mean, yes, it's vinyl is selling more than it used to, which was zero. So any kind of sale is 100%. So
yeah.
I'm always a little skeptical of these stories that are raving about how vinyl is, oh my gosh, it's up 200%. Yeah, but it didn't exist, you know, for 20 years. And I have to say this too. There's a lot of people my age and especially older, baby boomers that are older, and they are now, of course, extolling the virtues of vinyl, you know, because we grew up with it. And what I've always been reminding my friends and those who are older than me, is that you killed vinyl.
Yeah, we didn't do it.
No, yeah, my people my age and older, we couldn't throw those vinyl albums away fast enough when CDs came. We couldn't throw them away fast enough. We got rid of them. They were big. They were burdensome. You had to get up. Everything that they're now extolling about it's the listening experience and album art. I get it. But baby boomers, you killed vinyl. Video killed the radio star. Baby boomers killed vinyl. So I just need to remind you that if you're in your 50s or 60s or 70s and you're trying to really be cool and hip and say how great vinyl was and, oh, it's so cool and I've always kept my albums. No, you didn't. You could not get rid of your vinyl fast enough. It was record stores didn't even know how to react in 83 and 84 and 85. They couldn't even get the bins out of their record stores fast enough. They had to reconfigure all their stores because they couldn't fit the CDs, which came in these long boxes initially. I mean, they couldn't configure stores fast enough. So, baby boomers, I appreciate the nostalgia, but let's also deal with the reality. Baby boomers killed vinyl. Millennials are resurrecting it. So you certainly, Tom, are one of the resurrectors.
Well, you're very welcome, music industry. Doing it all for you. Doing all the hard work for you.
Well, now I want to go on the phones to a favorite friend of mine and also well-informed and opinionated pop culture pundit, Mick Kaler. How you doing there, Mixter?
I'm doing great, buddy, and just so you know, I am thrilled to be rid of my vinyl.
You know, it's just going to be us two curmudgeons here. You know, what I love is all, the, you know, everything that we hated about vinyl and couldn't wait to get rid of, the popping, the hissing, the way the needle would hop. Whenever you bought, tell me if I'm wrong or right, whenever you bought a vinyl album, what was the first thing you did?
You opened it up and you checked to make sure you had no scratches or
exactly.
dings on it.
You looked in the light to see if it had a scratch on it, because if it did, you had to go back to the store. You couldn't even play it.
Hey, I'll tell you something. Years ago, Elton John's A Single Man album, three times I had to get it replaced because it was either warped or messed up at the store I bought it at.
Yeah, but now it's warm. And you get to, there's a warmth on it. All I know is when I played that CD that first time, I was hearing, sounds and instruments on songs that I heard my whole life that I had never heard before. The sound was crisp. It was vibrant. It was bright. I could play the whole album without getting up. Yes, I get it. I get it about the album art. I get it about the sequencing and stuff like that. But all I know is I still like CDs. I'll play a vinyl album, but I will still play my CDs or my iPod.
Yeah, there you go.
Sorry. But I love these people that are like our age or older that are like, oh, man, I always loved vinyl. No, you didn't. If you're a baby boomer, you killed vinyl.
That's exactly what happened. You're right.
That age group, our age group and older, couldn't wait to sell our albums or just throw them out.
Well, I was so excited when I first heard about CDs, when they said, oh, it's going to make your stereo sound better.
Yeah.
And like I said, you're not going to have any wear and tear and all these things. I'm like, oh, are you kidding? I can't wait for this to happen.
Right, exactly. And like I said, there was such a frenzy that the record stores, they couldn't even keep the CDs in the stores. They were trying to reconfigure all their bins because
yeah.
of the long boxes that they were the CDs originally came in. It was a madhouse. It was craziness. It was chaos. Everybody our age or older, we just couldn't wait to get rid of vinyl. And now, vinyl's so cool because there's a warmth to the sound.
Forget about it.
Yeah, okay, whatever. But that's not what we're going to talk about here. I'm still mad. I'm still a little disappointed in my godson, who I treated him to buy as many albums as he wanted, and he bought some really good ones. to start his vinyl collection, but he didn't buy one Elton or one Bruce, which...
Well, you know what? Probably because being around you so much, he's probably heard plenty of it already, you
I know?
Know,
but you got to have that in your collection. Those are foundational.
Well, yeah, of course, yeah.
Those are foundational. So in the Pop Culture Club segment with Mick today, I wanted to talk about a couple of things. Over the last couple of weeks, we've certainly seen a few things going on. We'll talk, if we have some time, we'll certainly talk about the whole Roseanne kind of dust-up that's happened. But what I really wanted to address, and I wanted to get your take on this too, because I don't know if I'm just kind of screaming in the wind or not, is Robert De Niro at the Tony Awards earlier this month. He was out there to, talking about Bruce Springsteen, to introduce Bruce Springsteen, who had won a special Tony. And he was going to perform a little segment from his Springsteen on Broadway show, which is a one-man show, very confessional. It's kind of a takeoff from his book, Born to Run, as well as music. And I've seen it. I saw it back in November. If you're a Springsteen fan, or even if you're not, it's really a moving experience. And so Springsteen's going to perform this very heartfelt, somber. He tells this story about growing up with his father in this small town of Freehold, New Jersey, and plays a little part of my hometown. And so they have Robert De Niro introducing him. And what does he do?
He goes up there and says, F Trump.
Yeah. So, I mean, so first of all, it was bleeped on television. So
right.
Whatever he said... Everybody in the world, except for the 3,000 or 4,000 that were in that theater, if that many, were the only ones who heard it. The rest of the world did not. CBS bleeped it. So we didn't know. We had an idea of what he said, but we didn't know. All we heard was this hysterical cheering. So we knew he said something that was popular with the people in that room.
But yeah, they loved it.
Didn't know exactly what. So, of course, you go to the internet and you find out, what did Robert De Niro say? And then you find out. Like Mick said, he says F Trump. So immediately I was seeing these stories the next day, and even right after this happened. Oh, Robert De Niro was so cool, and I can't have more respect for him than I already did, and that was a great thing and everything. Politics aside, I'm not talking about politics. You like Trump, you hate Trump, I don't care. My point is, I thought Robert De Niro's comments were very inappropriate for a variety of reasons. Now, how did you feel about what he said?
I felt the same way, because this was, and just the way you set it up as far as De Niro introducing Springsteen's part of the show, had nothing to do with politics, with a president, whoever the president is. And also, as you're kind of alluding to, okay, everyone in that room loved it, you know, what De Niro said, everybody was going to learn what he said, you know, the next day in the paper. And it's like, there was no bravery there,
no.
Because what he did was preach to the choir.
Yeah, you know what would have been brave? If Robert De Niro would have gotten there and said, Donald Trump is the greatest president we've ever had.
Or if he would have come out wearing a Make America
yeah,
Great Again
exactly.
Hat.
That would have been brave, because that audience there, 99.9999% of them, were all in agreement with Robert De Niro. So what he said did not take bravery. All it was just rallying the troops. And what I have to say is, too, not only was it inappropriate because, as I said, it wasn't brave, but once again, I don't understand why the Trump people have to use this vulgarity.
Yeah.
Well, or the Trump haters. I understand if you don't like the guy. I'm sorry, but you probably should have voted for Hillary, because I bet you a lot of the people that hate Trump either didn't vote for Hillary or certainly didn't enthusiastically support her, and that's why she lost. But here's the thing. To say the vulgarity, it's about the office. You have to have some respect for the office of president regardless.
Sure.
And I thought that was just the vulgarity of that. And what I really thought, ultimately, that was not Robert De Niro's moment. That was Bruce Springsteen's moment. Robert De Niro did not win an award. He was up there to set the stage for Bruce Springsteen, and he basically upstaged Bruce Springsteen.
Right, exactly. And he made it about him and not about Bruce and a whole peripheral issue that had nothing to do with, you know, the presentation of Bruce's song.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm sorry, gang, but Robert De Niro was not brave. It was very inappropriate. It was very vulgar. It was kind of disrespectful. And ultimately, he upstaged Bruce Springsteen's moment there at the Tony Awards. He got a special Tony Award. It was Robert De Niro's job to to set the tone for what Bruce Springsteen was going to do next. And instead of setting the stage for people to be in this kind of somber mood of what Springsteen was doing, everybody was standing up and screaming like it was a political rally.
Right. And to put it in perspective, Jim, this is many years ago, back in late 1990, I was at a radio station situation where I got to meet President George Bush, the first one, Bush 41, and I was not a fan of his politics or things he was doing, yet I got to shake hands with him and meet him, and I respected
right.
the office and everything. When you're around that situation, you see the Secret Service and the crowds and all that
exactly.
stuff. It's awe-inspiring, where it's like, okay, I don't care if I agree with you or not, I'm going to respect the office.
Yeah, that's where I'm at there. So I'm glad that we're on the same page there, because I was getting all these accolades, and I was like, no, gang. And not only that, but you're not even helping the cause, because now Trump can always say, look at these Hollywood types, I told you so.
Yeah, typical liberals yeah. and all the other things they do. Yeah. The other thing I wanted to mention
Hold on,
was...
I got to take a quick break, Mick. We'll continue after this. I got to take a quick
okay,
break.
Sure. Okay, sure.
Yeah, this is Elton Jim. It's WGN Nightside here at WGN 720. We'll be right back. No switching. Got Mick Kaylor here on the phone. We're talking pop culture. We were just talking about Robert De Niro. I've got a text that someone said that Robert De Niro was brave because he was going to be up for criticism months later, which I understand, but I really don't believe that he was looking at being criticized. I think he was, like you said earlier, Mick, I think he was speaking to the choir, and he's happy to take the hits, because within his crowd, he looked like he was the man of the moment.
Right, but again, he hurt the cause in the long run, just like people who have taken things to the extreme against our current president have, you know, gotten into the mud and gotten dirty, and the other side's able to say, look what they're saying, look how disrespectful they are.
Well, I tell you, one thing that I looked at, you know, recently with the the Samantha Bee thing. Can you imagine, once again, forget about politics. I'm talking about the office of president. And like you said, you had a chance to meet the first President George Bush. You weren't a fan of his, but he was still the president of the United States. And you show respect to that office. Maybe not the man, but to the office. And I would love to know what would have happened if a right-wing comedian would have called Chelsea Clinton the C word, like Samantha.
Forget
Bieber.
About it. Yeah.
Or if they would have called one of Barack Obama's daughters the C word, could you imagine what would have been would have been said about that person?
It would have been a bad storm on whoever
yeah.
did that.
Samantha
you know?
B got off with an apology.
Yeah.
No problem.
Well, it was funny when Samantha B did that. And again, I'm not a big fan of our current president either. But when Samantha B said that, I first said, "She's still on the air."
Yeah, I mean, you have to have respect. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, Peter Fonda made this pedophile remark about Trump's son.
Yeah.
I mean, what you know, people, if you're going to be critical of the president, choose your words and choose your thoughts, carefully, because vulgarity doesn't work. You sound brash and crude, and as I said, you play right into the hands of those who are saying these people are just reactionary and overly emotional, and they're showing no class by using that vulgarity. But at the same time, once again, the first family, whether you like Melania, whether you like Ivanka, whether you like Barron, they're off limits.
Right, and you have to learn to fight smart and not, again, do things stupid. The other thing I really wanted to quickly mention was, I can't remember if it was for Fahrenheit for the 400, whatever it was, movie, or Bowling for Columbine, when Michael Moore won his Oscar.
Right.
And he did a big anti-Bush 43 thing during his acceptance speech.
It was Bowling for Columbine, yeah.
Yeah, but for Bowling for Columbine. And I was so disappointed because, first of all, it was a very good movie and a very good everything, and we know what Moore's politics were. And to be honest, in that room, I remember that he didn't get all cheers. There were a lot of people that were not happy that he was throwing his ideas of that into his acceptance speech. And I was so disappointed. I was like, you had such a good movie, you have such a good moment, and it's going to be tainted by what you're pulling now.
Yeah, like I said, I have no problems. I, you know, the thing is that I feel very disjointed right now. because my views are certainly liberal minded, but I feel that the left is going on such an over the top hyperbole, kind of smug and vulgar, that I can't embrace that, and I don't embrace what Trump is doing. So I'm kind of living in this middle ground here as an observer on both sides, and that's why I say this. Politics aside, I'm just looking at it as kind of an objective observer, not being on one side or the other of this, because I really can't embrace either side. And I'm telling you, right now, if you're going to bash Trump, great, but do it in a constructive way. Tell me what you're going to do. Just don't tell me how bad he is or how terrible he is. Tell me what you're going to do. Don't say F Trump. Say, here's how we improve ourselves. That's what, if Robert De Niro wanted to be, to send a message, that's the message, not some vulgar F word on national television.
I was going to say, and the other part of that is, for every liberal or person who's anti-Trump who is saying, oh, he says these terrible things and he tweets these ridiculous things, when you do the same stuff as him, whether it's Peter Fonda or Robert De Niro or Samantha Bee, when you do what he's doing, you're not helping yourself.
Yeah, be better. Be better. Yeah. Don't get into the muck.
Right.
You've been complaining about Republicans, how they're simple minded, they're closed minded, they're ignorant, and now you're acting worse than you said they were. So
yeah, you can't do that.
Yeah. So let me just leave it with one thing to say, that Robert De Niro is the worst interview on earth. He's never said two words about anything, and the one time he opens his mouth, and that's what he says.
Yeah.
After the break, we're going to talk more about Mick Kaler. But right now, we're going to take a quick break. Is that right? Yeah, we'll take a quick break. We'll be back after this. Hey, no switching. Jim Toronto, your host tonight for WGN Nightside. Be here for another 20 minutes or so, then handing it off to Nick DiGilio. And he'll take you through till 5 a.m. Continue talking to Mick Kaler here. And I should give Mick a nice little plug. Not only has Mick been in the radio business here in Chicago for about more than almost 20 years, worked with people like Larry Lujack and Robert Murphy and a bunch of others, right? I mean, who else did you work with?
Big John and Ray.
Oh, that's right. Rambler, yep. The Rambler. And you can hear Mick's work even today. In fact, if you watch the WGN Morning News, Mick and a friend of his, Al Flash, contribute regular parody songs that are played on the WGN Morning News on television on Channel 9 at least once a week or every couple of weeks. Isn't that true?
We show up like a bad penny or a Dutch uncle. Yeah, they play our videos that were known as Mick and Al, and they've been very generous with our little silliness that we send into them.
Do you have any other ones coming up?
We got a couple different ones about the actual staffers that we're putting together, and we'll be getting those out real soon. So you'll be seeing them on TV hopefully soon, too.
Yeah, on WGN Channel 9, the morning, Sunday morning, or not the Sunday, the morning news every day.
Monday through Friday, between 5 a.m. and 10 a.m., yeah.
So we were talking about Robert De Niro, but I wanted to talk about this. I guess it's a dotted line, because obviously Roseanne Barr got into a lot of trouble being a Trump supporter, and for whatever reason, I don't know if this was self-destructive, if this was done on purpose, because why would you send out a tweet about a somewhat anonymous figure who is not even in the White House or in the news anymore, like Valerie Jarrett? Why would you risk your career, this show that came out of nowhere, that was this reboot of the Roseanne show that was basically handed to you? It wasn't even her idea. It was Sarah Gilbert's idea to bring this back. And it was handed to her after the first episode of the first eight. They already renewed it. It got the second biggest ratings of the year as far as television is concerned. And she sends out this racist, abhorrent tweet about someone like Valerie Jarrett, who hasn't even been in the spotlight for two or three or four years already. I don't understand it, but fast forward to now, ABC decides to go forward with a Roseanne spinoff without Roseanne.
Yeah, it's going to be called The Conners, correct?
Yeah, I mean, this is probably one of the worst kept secrets. People were suggesting this as soon as the Roseanne news broke, and as soon as she was fired almost immediately by ABC, and they canceled the show. I think clearly John Goodman and Laurie Metcalf are two fine actors. They have star power. They can certainly carry a show. I think Sarah Gilbert's character and the story that they have created, her backstory with a couple of kids and kind of a weird little marriage thing going on, moving back to the Lanford, the hometown. There's certainly enough grist for the mill there. But I just wonder, can you have a Rose, even if she wasn't the strongest actress of all the people on that show, and she wasn't, and she may have not even been the strongest character, to be honest with you, she was the core of that show. Can you still have that show without her there in some way?
Well, let's put it this way. You just set up what I was going to comment was, first of all, it'd be like having the Seinfeld show without Seinfeld.
and
again, Jerry was not the greatest actor, and a lot of times the others got the better laughs and all those things. You pull Jerry out of it, though, as the straw that stirs the drink, you've got a whole different dynamic going on, and I think the same thing goes with Roseanne. And what I wanted to say was, you brought up John Goodman and Laurie Metcalf. Let me ask you a question. Name me a successful movie or project either of them have been in where they were the lead stars.
Oh, no, that's very true. I mean, I'm just wondering.
Doesn't happen.
No, I know. I mean, in movies, I agree. I think that television, yeah. It could be a different animal. There's a different kind of an audience that watches TV. And those two characters were very popular, aside from the actors. I mean, you know, the Dan character was very popular. But once again, he was funny because he was playing off of Roseanne.
Exactly, and he had that dynamic to bounce off of, and same with Laurie Metcalf. When you pull that away, you've got to create a whole new element and a whole new source of reason to be there and to play off things. And again, not that I'm a biggest fan of Roseanne, but I just think you have to understand what works and what doesn't. And I just don't know if this is going to work.
Yeah, it's going to be. I mean, as I said before, when I was doing some crosstalk with Patty, I mean, the first episode of The Conners is going to be one of the highest rated shows of the year.
Sure.
No question. And then we will see where they take it from there. But I just want. I don't know. Did you watch all the episodes? The eight episodes?
I watched, I think, the first two that I saw.
Now, once again, I have nothing to back this up except my own observation and my own kind of conspiracy-minded, you know, thoughts here. But I'll tell you, of the major characters, and I would consider John Goodman, Laurie Metcalf, and Roseanne as the major characters on that show, and maybe Sarah Gilbert, because she did have a heightened role in this reboot. Roseanne looked the most uninterested, the most unenergized. She didn't seem like she even knew her lines.
Yeah, it was just like, oh, I'm doing this again? Yeah.
Yeah, because here's the thing. As I said, don't forget, the show, the idea for the reboot came from a skit that was on The View with Sarah Gilbert and John Goodman, and it got such a good reaction that they said, hey, wait a minute, maybe we should do a reboot. And that's how it came. So they went to Roseanne, who seemed to be being very happy, sort of living an anonymous life in Hawaii on her macadamia farm. And all of a sudden, she's handed this show, and it becomes an immediate hit. They get renewed after the first episode. I wonder whether it was deliberate, or maybe it was deep down in her subconscious. I don't know. But maybe Roseanne, in some way, said, I really don't want to get back into the grind of a show anymore. I don't really want to do this. It was fun for eight episodes, but I don't want to keep doing this. I'm older now. I just want to sit back and relax. I can't believe you would. There was no reason for that tweet.
Well, the thing I thought of, the first word I thought of when I saw what she said and all that and heard the big firestorm, it was reckless. But as you're pointing out, it was unnecessarily reckless.
Exactly.
It was not somebody that was in the White House or had anything to do with the current administration.
Yeah. So
it would be like telling a Ronald Reagan joke today.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, wait a minute, he was in the 80s. What are you doing? Okay?
I just wonder if somewhere deep down, Roseanne was just kind of like, you know, I really don't want to keep doing this. Because if you look at the timing of it, she said this 2 days before the writers were supposed to go in and to start to conceptualize and write the new season.
Yeah, to get that together, and then she put all these people at least temporarily out of work. I'm glad to see that they have jobs again because of the situation.
Right.
But when you do something like that, you're affecting so many other people besides yourself.
And then here's the update. So, okay, that's part A of this. But the other part of this is while this whole Roseanne thing and the new Connor spinoff is announced, Tom Arnold comes out of the woodwork and says that he's got some tapes that are going to be, you know, that are going to impeach Trump. And I'm sitting there going, is this 1993 again? Why is Roseanne and Tom Arnold, why are they even on our radar screens?
Why are we focused on them?
You know, they were a tabloid sideshow for about 5 or 6 years when they were married. I mean, it was a disaster. And the tabloids ate it up. They acted like immature fools between him and then her doing the national anthem. He was, and he still talks just all over the place. And I'm like, is this 19? You know, this whole, you know, the sad part is not only was the Roseanne show a reboot, it's like 2018. The whole year is a reboot.
Yeah, we were going to look at, it's funny when you mention that, especially remembering back to, I remember there was a photo spread of them wrestling in the mud,
that's,
you know,
what I
Tom
mean.
And Roseanne and all this other stuff. And all of a sudden I realized they were a reality TV show, their relationship,
before
there was reality TV.
That is so true. Remember their loose meat?
Oh, yeah, the loose meat that they were going to serve, that Iowa-based situation. And again, it was like, You're being famous right now for everyone looking at your freak show.
And I'm sitting here going, it's 2018, and for some reason, I look in the paper and I'm looking online, and there's one story about Roseanne Barr and one about Tom Arnold, and I'm like, why are we still talking about these two goofballs?
Yeah, and you said we're back to early 1990s. Well, guess what? We also are with the fact that we have President Trump, Marla Maples, every once in a while when she comes out and does something. She used to be with Trump, you know, years ago. All of a sudden, she's big news again.
Anyway, I don't know. We were talking about Pet Sounds. As Brian Wilson once said, I just wasn't made for these times. I don't know.
I often think the same thing, pal.
Okay. Well, Mick Kaler, so thanks for your opinions and your always engaging conversation. We will hear your material on the WGN Morning News, your next parody song. And thank you for joining us here at Pop Culture Club on WGN Nightside.
Anytime, pal.
Take it easy, Mick. I'm Jim Toronto. This is WGN Nightside. We'll be here for another about 12 minutes or so, and then we'll hand it off to Nick DiGilio. So stay tuned. Be right after this. Please, no switching. Jim Toronto, right here at WGN Nightside. Short but sweet show. Tried to, as usual, cram in 4 pounds of bologna in a 1 pound bag. I think we've achieved that. I want to thank producer Tom Hush for spinning the dials behind the scenes, and my guests on the Millennial Meter, my godson Patrick Minogue, and Mick Kaler for the Pop Culture Club. If you enjoyed what you heard in this, I consider tonight's show kind of an appetizer, but the good news is, if you like what you heard and you want to hear a little more, I just found out a few days ago that I will be filling in on Saturday morning from 1 a.m. till 5 a.m., for Matt Bubala. So tune in from 1 to 5 if you have insomnia or a crying baby, or if you just like to listen to the radio from 1 to 5 on Saturday morning. Sort of feels like Friday night, but it's really Saturday morning. I'll be on filling in for Matt Bubala. So please, if you're near a radio, turn it on and listen. I'm sitting here dreading, as I was listening to David Jennings earlier talk about the weather. If you know me in any way, if you've listened throughout the years, I sweat at the thought of hot weather. So the idea of actually 95 degrees, and now they're saying it's going to be through 4th of July. Oh, I'm not looking forward to this whatsoever. I just came back. I went to Los Angeles for about 3 days. Weather there was like 75 during the day, 65 at night. Went to Dodger Stadium, saw the Cubs play. An amazing game. Javi Baez hit a grand slam. It looked like the Cubs were going to lose that game. They really weren't hitting well. And then Baez just hits two home runs, including the game, the one that just took the game right out of reach, a grand slam. I think it was like the top of the sixth inning. And then one of the cool things did, we went to the Hollywood Bowl, historic venue. I always wanted to go to the Hollywood Bowl. And so I said, you know, I look to see when the Cubs are there, because I've always wanted to go to Dodger Stadium. One of these bucket list things. You know what's funny? The movie The Bucket List was one of the worst movies. It was a complete flop, but it did give us this term, bucket list. The title and the concept of the movie have lived on longer than the movie itself. You may not even remember, the term bucket list came from a movie with Jack Nicholson and Morgan Freeman. And the movie came and went. But the idea of, you know, getting these things done before you're too old or before you die has certainly become a mainstay now in pop culture. And so I've always wanted to go to Dodger Stadium. So I looked it up when the Cubs were only there for 4 days. And so this year, they only played in Los Angeles 4 days. So I went out there and went online, got some tickets. And then luckily enough, I looked to see who was playing at the Hollywood Bowl. Maybe there'd be somebody there that I would like. And Rod Stewart was there with Cyndi Lauper. And I thought that wasn't a bad twin bill. So I got some tickets and went to the Hollywood Bowl. Very cool venue. Very similar in some ways to the Ravinia that we have here. Very pastoral. It's built in a mountain. It's built in a hill. And, of course, the acoustics are great. They don't have the grass like Ravinia has. But you certainly are encouraged to bring food and, you know, and eat among the stars. Especially the seats in the back are more of like bench-like, so you can do that a little easier. But a great venue. Good show. Rod still has the voice. And the show was a little Vegas-y, I have to say. It was actually the same show set-wise, and I think even, you know, production-wise, that he does do every so often in Las Vegas in his residency at Caesar's Palace. So, you know, it was a little on the, you know, on the schmaltzy side and a little over the top. But I've got to tell you, I think Rod Stewart's 73 years old. The guy still has the pipes. And when he sang, you know, You Wear It Well or Tonight's the Night, or he did a couple of nice cover versions, and they did an interesting kind of unplugged, you know, acoustic set where he sat down and everybody had acoustic instruments. And he did, of course, Have I Told You Lately and You're in My Heart. He still has the pipes. And I got to say, I was surprised. I'm looking at Cyndi Lauper, and, you know, you think, you know, Cyndi Lauper, she kind of looks like she's never really aged very much. And she's got that voice, and she still sort of talks like this when she comes out. And she's very kind of just out there. And I'm saying, how old is Cyndi Lauper? And I Googled it. Cyndi Lauper's 65 years old. She was moving around, jumping around, and so was Rod. In fact, I was, you know, he kicks soccer balls in the stadium. I just missed one. I was like, it was like a foul ball at a game. It just flew over my hand and the people just behind me, one section. I was so mad because I didn't know that he signs those balls that he kicks out. And he's been doing that for 20 or 30 years. He's 73 years old and he still has a pretty good kick. I don't know if he's going to be World Cup material. But for a 73-year-old guy, he still has the pipes to sing, and he still has the leg motion to kick a soccer ball into the crowd. So, Rod the Mod, I had a good time at the Hollywood Bowl. Very cool to go there. If you ever go to L.A., check those two things out. And I got to tell you two things. Go to the Apple Pan Restaurant, and Pink's is this hot dog place. It's as good as they say. We'll be back after this. No switching. And so that is it for me. I'm Jim Toronto. I've enjoyed this little jaunt into at WGN Nightside. It's the right side. Thanks again to producer Tom Hush, my guests Patrick Minogue and Mick Kaler. As I said, if you like what you heard here, we've got double the time. I'll be filling in for Matt Bubala on Saturday morning from 1 a.m. to 5. So if you're up, tune in.